Welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so grateful that you are back for another episode. Please do take note that all opinions and recommendations and encouragements that are shared on this podcast are my personal opinion or the opinion of the guests that I have on. It is not to be taken as medical or mental health advice. Please do consult your medical professional or your mental health professional with any questions or changes that you would like to make regarding your own personal situation. Welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so excited you are back for another episode. I never take it for granted that you lend your ear, your time, and your focus to this podcast. And I always, always aim to bring you value and incredible guests who bring incredible value to make your day. Today is no different. I have such a special person with me today. I will put out there, though, if you are not into topics that go into depth, if you get offended easily, if you are put off by certain taboo subjects, this may not be the episode for you. However, it is a powerful conversation that you are about to hear. I have with me today Crystal Denise Garcia, who is a self-love coach, a transformational speaker, and a dream facilitator. She is a human rights advocate of 20 years and has 15 years plus of coaching individuals. And she's also been a speaker on the Today Show, the Red Pill documentary by Cassie J. She's been interviewed by Mother Jones, The Daily Dot, MSNBC, PJTV, and more for being inclusive of men's rights and their needs as victims and survivors in the human rights discussion. She also hosted a local public access TV show in Medford, Oregon, where her episode on women's rights and speaking up about female victims had over 20,000 views. She is the CEO and founder of the Open Hearts Unite, which promotes unity, sovereignty, and freedom through self-love activism. She is bilingual, English and Spanish fluent. She works with both genders and all of those who are survivors, and she supports detoxing everyone who is detoxing from limiting beliefs and moving into self-loving beliefs. She also provides self-love coaching to organizations and businesses who want to make a difference in the productivity of their company through the accelerated joy of their employees, because happy employees equals productivity. She also recently became a published author, and her book, From the Mud, The Alchemy of Self-Love Poetry, is available on Amazon.com, and I will put the link to that in the show notes. Oh, Crystal, welcome to the show. I am so excited to get into all the things, hear all about you, introduce you to my audience, and promote self-love. I've never heard it called self-love activism, so I'm excited to hear about that as well. But welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks, Michelle.
I'm so excited for everyone else to get to know you. We've been chatting offline and behind the scenes, and y'all, she is just an incredible person. So strong, but just real and raw. And so I'm just really excited for you to get to know her better. So for my audience who is not familiar with you, who have not checked you out yet, tell us a little bit about who you are, your story, and how you came to do the work that you do.
Sure. So as Michelle has beautifully introduced me, I'm a self-love coach, transformational speaker, dream facilitator. So I am a survivor of covert sex trafficking, which is incorrectly called sex work or the sex industry. And I was in that world for about 13 years. So I was a professional dominatrix, I was a stripper, and I was a quote unquote prostitute. And so I spent many years through that, and I spent most of my life in trauma. I was traumatized. I had a very abusive life since very young, and I survived sexual trauma. So through surviving all of these things, I really wanted to make a difference for other people and support them finding the way through, because most of the things I had to spearhead my own way through blindly. So it took me way longer than it would have had I had someone to support me and give me some guidance during all of this.
Wow. I mean, what a mouthful that you just said, very matter-of-factly, where, you know, I used to be a clinical social worker in child welfare, so I know the world of foster care, the world of abuse, the world of neglect and trauma. I'm not as familiar with the world of sex trafficking, and I had never heard the word dominatrix until I met you. So for my listeners who may not be as familiar as well, because when we hear the word prostitute or when we hear the word, you know, sex worker, we have this image that comes to mind and we have an image of this world that most of us, at least the people that I know in my world, are not familiar with. And so there's judgment that comes with that because we don't understand it. And we don't have knowledge about the people, the human beings that are involved in those situations and circumstances. So just shed a little bit of light about that world for us so we can have more of an understanding about really the depth of what you came out of.
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of people, we live in a society that completely glorifies the, you know, what's called a sex industry, calling it an industry rather than calling it what it is, which is trafficking. And so with that itself, there's a lot of gaslighting that's in place to keep someone exploited. So I use the term covert and overt sex trafficking. Most people, when they hear sex trafficking, they hear of people who are abducted or, you know, just grabbed out of the blue. So I call that overt sex trafficking when I'm having these conversations to kind of create a distinction.
Okay.
Of the two different things, like what they generally look different. And covert sex trafficking is all of the parts where it's, you know, they prey on people who, they create this establishment that are open to and prey mostly on people who have dealt extensively with trauma, addictions, or, you know, who are in a compromised state or who are in financial distress. So all of this is set up and we have a society that sets this up as well. And a lot of people don't understand. They have this, you know, this belief. They're like, oh, well, money is exchanging hands, so that makes it consensual. Actually, no. The whole reason money is exchanging hands is to bypass consent. Mm. So money exchanging hands does not make something consensual. So there is, I mean, it's a brutal world. It's a completely brutal world. What it is, it's just perpetual sexual violation the entire time.
And it's both men and women. I just want to.
Absolutely. It's men, women, transgender, you know, it's just people who, you know, get preyed on and get exploited. And then we have a society that continues it, that continues the coercion with glorifying it and saying, oh, well, this is sexual empowerment. No, it's not. It's sexual avoidance.
Yeah. So, how is it different? You know, how is it different from the porn industry or what they call the porn industry? Or
no,
is it
it's not. That's all the same thing. It's all connected.
Oh, okay.
All, gotcha. Yeah, that's covert. Yeah, as well. It's perpetual rape, you know? And so, but people have these ideas that are pushed in society and they think it's sexual empowerment.
Wow. So, I mean, it's so enlightening to be educated on the differences and the nuances, you know, because we are socialized in America specifically. It's a very hypersexualized, you know, society. And it's ever since the 60s and the, you know, the sexual revolution and free love and all the things, it's been infused. I mean, even into commercials and, you know, even Disney and kids show, I mean, everything is hypersexualized. And so it definitely supports, you know, that covert world. How did you, if you're comfortable, how did you get introduced to that world or how does someone get introduced to that world?
It really begins with abuse, you know, if for me, I had my whole life was abuse. So that, you know, another abusive state is normal. Yeah. So, and that these people prey upon. You know, if people are, you know, they have all of these options, but it's really just, you know, dealing with addiction. I mean, I was a sex addict. So between that, you know, dealing with drugs, alcohol, trauma. So with all of those things, it was just, yeah, that's where I found myself.
Yeah, because I mean, if all you know is trauma from your childhood, that's normal. Well, it's normalized for you because you're socialized into it developmentally. And if that's all you know, then I guess that's what you go out seeking in the world as well. And whatever we're looking for, we're going to find. And so the opportunities.
And also, you know, getting sucked into it. There are pimps, there are, you know, all sorts of things. And if, you know, me being vulnerable and not having anybody to take care of me, it was very easy to be exploited.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you were in that world for years. How, mm-hmm. what was the beginning seed of the journey to exit that world?
I really don't know that there's like one thing. It's just, you know, it's the constant numbing out. You know, it took my addictions were what, you know, consistently being preyed upon. So it's pretty difficult to find, you know, to be able to find the way out. But I would say that there's so many different threads, but part of it was speaking. I wanted to feel joy. I didn't feel joy. You know, I was pretty much walking around like the living dead. I felt like a zombie. So that would be one thread. Another thing, a main one, was getting sober, because, you know, being numbed out, it's easier to be exploited while being numb.
Well, so right, because you can disassociate, you can leave mentally the situation, and, you know, your body just is, whatever's happening to your body is happening, but your mind can go other places. But I mean, you know, people talk about a rock bottom. They talk about this moment where they have this light bulb where it's like, you know, enough is enough.
I don't think it really works like that. I mean, there's so many moments, like, you know, there are so many rock bottoms. You know, as an addict, it takes more than rock bottom. It takes a desperation, but there's not just like one rock bottom or one moment. My life was rock bottom. You know, I lived it for 13 years. That was pretty freaking rock bottom. But it was, you know, I think it was just the gradual things that I did, the gradual work on self-love, all of the gradual things that finally added up together. And then slowly, you know, between that and the self-care and the, you know, getting sober. So yeah, there wasn't like just one aha moment. I wish it were that simple, but it really wasn't. It took a long time.
Well, what was the catalyst for you becoming sober?
The catalyst for me becoming sober was being a mom.
Okay. Because and that often happens when a woman gets pregnant, there's something that happens. And I've never been physically pregnant, but just from helping to raise my cousins and hear, my mother's a midwife as well, so I've, ever since I was three, I've been around pregnant women and heard the stories. But there's something very special and spiritual that happens when you have another life inside of you.
Well, I was sober while I was pregnant, but then I got right back to it. So it wasn't just like giving birth that stopped.
Had an experience of being sober while you were pregnant, which gave you an alternate experience to what you had been experiencing. No,
I went right back to it.
You know, Crystal's like, no.
No, as soon as, you know, like I went right back to it. I would do the whole pump and dump thing. I would, you know, and then once the kid was off breast milk, then I was, you know, back to doing drugs and stuff like that. So it took me a while to finally like just be like, this is not really the life I want. But again, it took me seeking joy. I had to find it. And I had a very difficult time because
know to seek joy though?
I saw it in other people.
Gotcha. Okay.
I saw it in other people, but it still didn't seem, it wasn't even a wish. Like it was a wish. It wasn't even that it was real for me, because I would see other people and I was like, wow, that must be amazing. I wish that, you know, I couldn't even fully verbalize it, but there was a wish within me that was like, wow, just being in awe of these people. And I mean, when I was pregnant, I was homeless. When my kid was 13 months old, I was homeless again. So I didn't have breaks. I didn't have gaps. I didn't have safety or any of that. So it was, I had to I was my own Humpty Dumpty and I was my own wall. So it was like, I had to put all the freaking pieces together. You know, I didn't have, no, there was no all the king's horses and all the king's men. That was me.
Yeah.
I had to do that all myself.
I cannot imagine the strength of being that it has taken you to live your life and your story, because I mean, this is not where the story ends and it's not who you, it doesn't define who you are, but it gives you such a perspective to gift the world with education and knowledge as well, which I'm grateful for, because there's so many people that suffer that don't have that strength of voice that you have to become an advocate. But, you know, it's fascinating to me that it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you were living your life, you know, as a walking zombie, you were numbed out, you were doing, you know, serving your addictions. And you also were looking through a window and seeing joy and saying, wow, other people have that. So it's an option. And then did you ask yourself, well, why not me? Or how can I get that?
No,
that-
I didn't even see it. See, the thing is, I didn't even see it as an option for myself. I was just in awe of it. I was like, wow, that's amazing. I wish that, you know, that's it. Like, it didn't even seem possible for me. When I first realized it, it was just more being in awe of people. And that's why I tell people, I'm like, just shine who you are, because you have no idea who you're inspiring just by walking by. Because it's in seeing people who were holding that deep joy, in connecting, starting to have healthy friendships with people who had that access to joy. And I'm like, wow, you know, just being in awe of it. It was simply the awe of it that got me on the path, and just the wish of it. And then I slowly started to see, like, well, maybe I can have joy. It started first in awe. It wasn't even real to me. I didn't even think it was possible for me. And it took a very long time to move from awe to maybe not, I didn't think I could even get to that kind of joy, the joy that I have now. But I was like, maybe I can have some joy. Maybe I could be, but I didn't even know joy. I was just like, I just want to be happy. Like, you know, can I have a day of happiness? Is happiness possible for me?
Just an hour. Give me an hour.
Yeah. So it was very, like, very small increments. It was very tiny, way spaced out, because I didn't have anybody to be like, hey, you know, there's a possibility for you, you know? And so nobody was like, hey, you know what? See all this life, see all this beauty. It's possible for you. Wow. And so slowly, as I was grasping for this, you know, holding on to the string, like trying to unravel this whole thing, that's when I slowly started to get in contact with people, with healthy people who did start saying, you can live in possibility. Anything is possible. Now, I resisted that and I fought them for years. it's not very easy. But yeah, it began with awe, and it began with seeing it in other people and just being in awe of it.
You know, so talk to me more about the journey of, you know, fighting and kicking and screaming your way to joy. Because you don't often hear that journey. You know, yeah, most people, it's like, oh, I, you know, I embraced it and I walked towards it. And you're like,
no, I fought it. I fought it every step of the way. And bless the hearts of my friends who are in my life today, because they were the ones I fought, you know, and because they were coming forward to me, and love was not normal to me. That wasn't my norm. My norm was abuse. So my identity was used to abuse. So love felt very threatening to me. So I would fight the daylights out of them. And I mean, I have, you know, I always just keep dragons and wolves around me. So, you know, they didn't sit there shaking in a corner, you know, like they brought it right back. But it was the, you know, but it's sad that I put them through that. You know, it upsets me that they went through that because of my unconsciousness. But
well, they chose to walk that with you. Yes. So that was their choice.
They loved me, you know, and they do love me to this day. And I'm grateful to them, and they, you know, we appreciate and we love each other, but it was rough. I was just out of this, like, I don't know. I don't even have words for myself.
But you know, what's fascinating though, is that you really had to, like you said, reframe and completely update your identity and your mindset and literally your brain and your brain chemistry. You had to almost like trade in from a Windows machine to a Mac machine. So you're still a computer. You just had to change the operating system.
My identity had to die. And you know, it just had to just die off continuously. It's just the death and rebirth of identity. But it was brutal. Like I spent years feeling just completely deconstructed because I completely, you know, I took a lot of life coaching stuff. Like I had a lot of coaching myself, lots of therapy, which I continue with because that's just you know, health.
Therapy is like, health.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, and there was just a lot of deconstruction of all that I thought was real. And moving, so it was a hefty process. And for years, I just felt like destroyed. Like talk about just like, I didn't know which way was up. I was trying to figure it out. I made a hot mess along the way. Yeah, no, it's not pretty, you know? And you know, I speak of self-love and I think a lot of people think that self-love is pretty. It is not. It is drag out knuckles, like bare, raw, like down in the mud, face down. It is ugly. Self-love is ugly.
I love that you bring that perspective. I love it because you're right. People think it's as pretty and rainbows and hearts and flowers. And in the month of love, you know, what we think of February is the month of love. You know, people are like, oh, it's this idealized image. And no, real true love. And it has to start with yourself. So I love that you started there. Is so raw, and it's really like a drag out MMA fight, if you're familiar with mixed martial arts, in the jungle, in the swamp, where you are coming out bloody raw. You might be broken, but you'll be whole, which is the whole point. I love that. Talk to me and talk to us and audience. I am just drinking this up with you, so I know that you're enjoying, because there's so many, not only nuggets of wisdom, but I think you're demonstrating also that in the realness of who you are, like you said, just show up and be you, and you never know who is going to be impacted by that. There's such a strength in you that was always there that couldn't die despite what happened to you, which I celebrate and I honor that. And so I just love that you're able to share your story, because there's so many people on the journey who don't have that strength yet. And I always put the yet there because they're walking their journey. And if they keep walking, they will get to that strength to be able to share their story to impact the people that are assigned to them. So your journey to self-love started with the sobriety is what you said, right?
It started before then. It started with like little searching before then. My journey out of the covert sex trafficking and like moving out of my addictions definitely started with sobriety from alcohol and drugs and stuff like that. But the self-love.
Did you have self-love when you were in those worlds?
I was searching for it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we ever don't have any self-love. I think we always have, you know, that it's there. So I would say, yes, I did have self-love, but I would say I began to connect with it more throughout my life. And I started to work on it while I was in those worlds. But it got very, I was still sucked into the coercion of the world and conversations like, oh, this is empowerment. It's not. So yes, I was definitely accessing self-love during that time, and it deepened and continued to expand over the time. Yeah.
I love that. And you've said a couple times that world of coercion and abuse and trafficking is not empowerment.
Yeah.
You've said it a couple times, and I want to get into that because I did a whole series in season 2 of the podcast on empowerment and what is empowerment. And listeners, I encourage you to go back and listen to the different definitions and perspectives on that as well. So I want to ask you 2 questions. Number 1, what is your definition of empowerment? And then 2, why is that world of sex trafficking and that coercion, and why is that not empowerment? Because there's a lot of people that buy into that concept that, you know, sexual freedom and taking control of your body and doing whatever you choose to do is empowering. So that's a 2-fold question. So what is your definition of empowerment? And then why is that world not empowering?
Yeah. So my definition of empowerment is health, living in possibility and freedom. There is no freedom in covert sex trafficking. And doing whatever we feel like is not freedom. That's a temper tantrum. A lot of people confuse like running around in temper tantrums with freedom. It's like, no, right. You're living at the effect of your own child, you know, like your own inner child run amok.
Right.
So I don't believe doing whatever I feel like is freedom. I actually believe that that's powerlessness. And so there is a lot of powerlessness, and the whole system is a powerlessness. And so a lot of people think that going out in the world and, you know, just throwing sexuality wherever is freedom. It's not. And it's not about how much sex we have. It's about the fact that there is no intimacy with it. You know, if there's no intimacy, it's not a numbers game. You can have one partner, you can have 50, whatever. It's more about the relationship to sexuality. And the problem with the quote unquote sex industry is it promotes disconnect with sex. Now, a lot of people don't understand that. So I'm going to go into depth as what I mean by that, because the sex industry is actually based on sexual avoidance, not sexual connection. And a lot of the conversations that people have about, I'm going to go out and get drunk and have sex wherever I want, and that's sexual empowerment. Actually, usually that's a panic attack. So a lot of times there is anxiety about having sex. So a lot of times people will numb out, get super drunk to have sex, to actually avoid having a relationship with sexuality because it's so terrifying and confronting. So that's what I mean when I'm saying it's actually sexual avoidance. So the sex industry is actually a flashy form of sexual repression, because we don't avoid sexuality if we're not repressed.
Interesting.
Okay, we want to have an intimate relationship with sexuality. That's sexual empowerment. When we can be present with a human being, I'll speak for myself. When I'm being present with a human being, we don't need all this stuff. And I tell people, be very careful about bringing fantasy into the bedroom, because what it does is it promotes sexual disconnect, not sexual connect. A lot of people think I need a bunch of bells and whistles in here because we're disconnecting. It's like, no, that's actually going to promote even further disconnect. When I realized that all I needed presence and love and safety and respect.
Which is intimacy that is not connected with that world.
And no, it's not.
And I love you're just so plainly explaining it's about connection with another human being. And when you bring in fantasy and play and all of those bells and whistles, as you call them, it really does disconnect you from that person in the room that you are connecting physically with, but it's more than just a physical connection. There's that spiritual or that soul connection there. I mean, it is physical as well, but it was intended to be a beautiful experiential connection between two human beings, which you're right, that world completely just reframes and disconnects from.
Yeah, absolutely. And it begins with self. Like if I didn't have, and I slow down to see how I'm being with my body, because a lot of times people will just use their own body to get off. That's not what our body's for. Our body's not just I'm gonna quick get off. Like, well, then it's like almost violating self. I'm a sex addict in recovery. So I had to work through all of the nuances of this and actually feel my relationship with sexuality. Now I have a beautiful, healthy relationship with sexuality. But that doesn't mean I'm having sex at this moment. And people confuse the two, that having sex automatically equates to having a healthy sexuality. No, it does not. I had tons of sex. I didn't have a healthy sexuality. Those two are not always synonymous.
So what is a healthy sexuality?
The healthy sexuality for me is being present with my own body first, starting with my own body, having a healthy relationship with myself, having a healthy relationship with self, self-pleasuring as well. Like not using my body to just get off like this thing. You know, if I'm treating my body like a thing, I'm objectifying myself. It's like a self-violation. That's not healthy. So for me, healthy sexuality is being present to not just sex, because sexuality is not just sex either, but to the creative life force energy that is sexuality. Because to me, sexuality and erotica has been misused so freaking much that porn is not erotica. Porn is actually the antithesis of erotica. Erotic energy is this beautiful, and it's very difficult to like just pinpoint like, specific, But the erotic energy is in everything. It's in life energy itself. It's, you know, I can have a beautiful moment with erotic moment, and that doesn't mean I'm having an orgasm. Again, a lot of people equate like genitals with erotic. That's not the only way to have an erotic experience. If I'm sitting there enjoying the sun, the warmth of the sun on my skin, the beautiful breeze, that's arousing. And I'm not talking about genital arousing. My whole being is aroused in the presence of life itself. That's erotic. So that's part of healthy sexuality, is not just this hyper focus on the genitals that everybody, and there's nothing wrong with focusing on the genitals, but it's not the only place where sexuality exists. I mean, sexuality is so big.
Yeah. I mean, and it's very widespread that people talk about, you know, especially for women, but also men, intimacy starts in the mind, and it is more than the genitals. You're right. It's so interesting how we always go back to and focus on just those parts and pieces of the body versus looking at us as a whole human being in a body. So yeah. I love that. Now, Let me ask you, did gratitude or faith come into your journey to self-love at all?
Gratitude, absolutely. Spirituality, definitely, which has evolved for me over time. I'm Taíno, so I'm now currently exploring my Taíno spirituality. So that's
what is that? Wait, you cannot go on without, I've never heard that word. Say it again.
Oh, Taíno, it's native of Boricán, which people know as Puerto Rico.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm currently actually in the process of learning about, you know, our native heritage and spirituality. So
interesting.
So spirituality has been a big thing throughout my life, and it's looked many different ways. And now it's here like this, but at the root of it, at the end of the day, it's divinity and a higher power. And so that has been everything. It's been integral. And for me, I'm in the 12-step program. So higher power is different for different people. Like for me, I believe in, you know, divinity and, you know, Atabe and all of that. But for some people, they believe in a spiritual being, and some people are atheists. So in my experience, I've seen people who are atheists where their higher power is integrity, you know, like, and fellowship.
A value system. Yeah.
Yes.
Because Everybody believes in something. Even
absolutely.
So like an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God or a monotheistic God, but every human being believes in something. There is a worldview, There is a value system that drives every single person.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So we are coming to our time. And I know that I am bringing you back because we have only scratched the surface. You have so much to offer. So audience, this is not the end. Be on the lookout for the next episode. But before we go, I have to ask you, your book, because when we welcome to the club of the published authors, I'm so excited for you. And again, I'll put the link in the show notes, listeners, for the how to get the book. And it's poetry. And when I say it's powerful, because I've seen some of the poems, powerful, the use of language and the flow. It's so powerful. So talk to me about the book. Where did it come from? You know, how was the process? And tell us more about the book.
Sure. Yeah. So my book is called From the Mud, The Alchemy of Self-Love Poetry. And it's been-
And wait, pause for a moment. Just how fitting that I use the metaphor of the MMA in the forest in the mud for your journey. And your book is called From the Mud. I love that.
Yeah. And so it's the cover of the book is a photo that I took of a lotus. And that's where the title came from. Because, you know, the lotus grows out of the mud, and I'm like, yep, that's me. So I just really related with that. And but it's a collection of years of poetry and just my journey, my actual journey of what it looked like, you know, all of the tumultuous things that I've experienced the past 5 years, you know, and longer, but, you know, I started writing about it, you know, the past 5 years. And so I take people on a journey of that. It, you know, in my book. And I grew up when I was very little, I didn't speak for a few years because I was so traumatized. I barely said anything. So I was pretty quiet. And so now my voice is just so important to me. Like, I know it's important, you know, everybody's voice is important. But to me, to be able to come from a space where I didn't speak for years and to now be able to actually use my voice and trust that. And so So the poetry itself is an expression of self-love because I am trusting my voice. I'm allowing myself to just be bare. And I mean, raw. I'm like, ah, you know, here we go. And so each of those poems really took the self-love of allowing myself to use my voice from years of having my voice shut down, from years of being shamed and being told you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that, to finally giving my voice freedom. So that's what the book is about.
I love that. And y'all, she is not kidding about the powerful language and laying it out raw for you. And so if any of her story has intrigued you during this episode, in this conversation, please, please bless yourself and go get the book because you will just be blown over by the realness, the rawness, but also the journey, you know. And I love that it ends in self-love. And I love that metaphor of the lotus, you know, growing from the mud, because you are such a beautiful human today with such a strong, powerful voice to educate, inspire, motivate, and bring such a gift to the world. So I'm just so grateful that we met. I know this is like a long standing, you know, relationship. So listeners, I know you're going to tune in for the next one when she comes back, but for those who right now are like, I've got to get more beyond the book. I want to work with you. I want to get more about what you do. I want to learn more, because really the bio did not do you justice. Where can people find you? How can they connect with you?
Sure. So if you go to openheartsunite.org, that's my website, you'll see all of my social media on there. You can catch my podcast, The Vivifier, on there. I'm on YouTube. So all of the links will be on there. And definitely sign up for my newsletter, because I do self-love guided meditations, and they are solely for the newsletter once a month.
I love it. I love it. Oh, Crystal, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been such an epic conversation, and I can't wait to bring you back, but I'm just so grateful that you came on to share and that you were willing to show up. You know, they use that word authenticity, but really you showed up in truth, and you showed up, you know, as you are, which I really think impacted and valued someone who's listening to the show today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
And listeners, as I always say, keep walking, always, always keep walking, never stop walking, because if you continue to walk, you will reach your destiny, you will reach your destination, and on your journey, always, always choose gratitude. As you know, every single episode, I end with my encouragement for you to choose gratitude on your journey as you keep walking. But have you ever asked yourself, that's great, Michelle, but how do I do that? How do I implement gratitude? How do I choose gratitude? It's not easy living this life. And sometimes I don't feel very grateful. How do I incorporate gratitude into my daily life? Well, I've got you covered. Just for you, I have a Gateway to Gratitude mini course in the Successful Diligence School. There is a link in the show notes, as well as a coupon code just for podcast listeners, where you get 50% off. So head to the link in the show notes or successfuldiligence.com and click the school tab on the website. It will take you to the school and you can see the Gateway to Gratitude course, which walks you through how to implement gratitude into your daily life. Trust me, gratitude and gratefulness, when implemented effectively, will change your life.